Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Blizzard Watch podcast. I'm Matt. I'm your host. With me is Joe, my co-host. We're going to talk about the various things that happen in that there Blizzard. But first, how you doing, Joe? You up to anything?
I am fantastic. I found somebody to source wood plinths from, somebody in the local community for my bust. So I'm really excited because that means I don't have to worry about like buying random chunks of wood. I can actually have ones made. It's really happy. It makes me feel good.
Okay. Well, I have no such wood plinth issue. So instead, I'll move on to talking about some stuff in the old universe, the actual one we live in, not some game universe that I've been spending a lot of time in, being hectored by Kiefer Sutherland. Not Kiefer Sutherland, Keanu Reeves. Oh, my God.
Keanu Reeves, yeah. I was going to say, way different.
Yeah. That would be a Metal Gear game if Kiefer Sutherland was giving me trouble. I still, like, sometimes, I mean, when they get a famous voice actor and use that voice actor's appearance, it's always a little weird for me.
Yeah.
And I can't remember which Call of Duty game it is. It might not even be Call of Duty. But the one where they got Kevin Spacey. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I don't remember the game specifically, but I remember what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, and like it was like Kevin Spacey played a decent villain in the game to begin with, but when his real-life shenanigans came to light, and I say shenanigans, not making light of it, just making light of him, that made that game real hard for me to ever replay, because it's like, yeah. So I kind of wish they hadn't gone with Keanu Reeves' face as well as his voice. I get why they did it, but I kind of wish they hadn't done it, because it does get distracting at times. And this is one of the reasons why I'm kind of glad WoW gets voice actors and doesn't use their faces, because it would be weird as heck for me if I saw Liam O'Brien's face every time I saw Illidan talking.
Or if Metzen's face was just straight up grafted onto Thrall. Yeah, that'd be weird. Yeah.
Or if, you know, we go to Metzen's house and it turns out he actually does look like Thrall and the Metzen face is a mask he wears. But anyway, I brought up Illidan because Burning Crusade Classic is going to be shipping out not too far off. We don't know exactly when, but they are working on it, and the PTR is soon. When it does, they've made the choice to ship Burning Crusade with Classic with patch 2.4.3, which is the last real content patch for the Burning Crusade before Wrath came out. The reason that's important is twofold. One is that class balance was in its final form.
Mm-hmm.
This means, among other things, that warrior tanks could use Thunderclap in defensive stance, and that it hit multiple targets, which meant that they had much greater AoE threat. In other words, it's something I care about. I don't know every class, and I didn't play every class in TBC, but I do remember that, and that's like just one of many examples of things that basically every class will be in its final form, and they're not going to do any class balance. It's going to be very similar to the way WoW Classic worked, where they put out the last patch, 1.12, essentially, is what they based it on. And then they didn't do any major class balance. I think they did like one change to Shaman because they were gonna do it anyway. Like it was the very first change they made when Burning Crusade came out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, they like, you know, the only reason we waited for the Burning Crusade was because we knew it was coming anyway. So we might as well just put it in to WoW Classic because it was what we intended to do. So that kind of thing might happen, but as it stands right now, the Burning Crusade will release on the last patch in terms of class balance and mechanics, not in terms of content. The content will be phased, just like WoW Classic was, and we don't know the exact order of the phasing yet. But it's a fair sight to indicate it's probably going to be, you know, like Karazhan first,
mm-hmm.
maybe the two small 25 man raids after Karazhan. Then they probably will put out Tempest Keep, the Eye, and Serpent Shrine Caverns. Possibly they'll stagger them out. Possibly they'll have them both come out at the same time. The thing is that if they did it at the time, the way they did it in original, you know, Burning Crusade, there's attunements to consider because they did staggered content releases in WoW Classic because there weren't a ton of really big attunements in original vanilla WoW. There were some, but there weren't. Like the only one that really comes to mind is the Blackwing Lair one. The upper Blackrock Spire, lower Blackrock Spire, Blackrock Blackwing Lair attunements come to mind. And they weren't big like the way that the Burning Crusade ones. The Burning Crusade ones, I think, like to get the Karazhan, did you have to run like four dungeons?
Yeah, and you had you had to run like four dungeons. You had to get the keys. You had to do something specific. It was very easy to miss. Like I remember after you beat Muru, why can I not remember names today? Weird, screechy, not Ragnaros. When you defeated him, there was an urn that you had to find that was like really blended into the wall. And this is back before the times of, oh, this thing is highlighted with an aura, so you know you can go click on it. So if you didn't do it and you missed it, congratulations, you have to run the dungeon all over again. Like it was pretty involved. And then you had to do a series of quests for the Violet Eye to even be allowed into the door.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
so, and that's just Karazhan. That's just Karazhan. Yeah. Then there was attunements to get into like Tempest Keep, I think. And there was a big attunement to get into Black Temple. Like you had to like run other stuff you had to go back in time and do Mount Hyjal to get the attunement to go to Black Temple.
Yes.
So
I think you had to do all the previous raids.
I don't know how, and they ended up taking them out at later points. So I don't know if they're going to just say, okay, instead of doing attunements, we're just going to phase the releases and you'll just get like, okay, this is phase one. These raids are on it. These are the ones you can go to. But if you look at it, they have, like I said, that you do Tempest Keep, the Eye, and Serpent Shrine. Then you could do Mount Hyjal and Black Temple. And then finally there would be, I want to say the Sunwell. Yeah, the Sunwell Plateau would be the final raid. And if they phase it so that they come out together in groups, or if they phase it, if each one comes out individually. And I didn't even mention Zulaman is in there. Zulaman should be coming out at some point. And the gear that dropped in Zulaman was comparable to Black Temple Mount Hyjal gear. So if you put Zulaman out earlier, it will trivialize those raids. And that's something that they'll have to work out. I'm pretty sure they won't put it out before Black Temple.
Likely not, no.
But, I mean, I remember it coming out. And I might be wrong about this, because it's been a long time, guys. But I remember it coming out right up, like, during Black Temple. Black Temple was out for a while, and then Zulaman came out. But that's just my memory of it. It could be wrong.
Yeah, I think you are accurate. It's been a long, long time.
Yeah, it's been a long road getting from there to here. But I do think it's interesting that they're going to be, mechanically speaking, it's coming out in the final mode, the final form of Burning Crusade. I understand why they're doing that. For one thing, I think a lot of people would be really mad trying to level up from 60 to 70 and trying to tank like on their warrior tank that they tanked with in WoW Classic, and then realizing, oh God, Paladins and Druids are so much better for five-man content. And Paladin and Druid players would be really mad to tank all the way through all that content and get their gear guilds ready to go and get to Karazhan and be like, oh, I'm dying a lot because I don't have this one ability that warrior tanks have. And it doesn't matter how good my gear is. And it doesn't matter how much threat I can hold. When we get to the boss, I have to sit down if we want to kill it. That's not going to feel good. And to a degree, that's not going to be fixed.
No.
When you go into WoW Classic's version of Burning Crusade, Burning Crusade Classic, if you are playing a druid or a paladin, you're going to be like a second choice to do some bosses. For instance, Illidan has a shear mechanic, and you are not going to have anything to use to deal with shear. There is no button that you have that deals with shear. There is shield block that warriors can do that completely negates shear. And that's it.
I was going to say, I think the other interesting thing, and not to like, you know, just switch topics completely in it, is I remember distinctly that Burning Crusade shifted away from melee heavy raid group content or raid group structure. And like, it was the first time I think ranged DPS that wasn't a hunter was like truly honestly viable for a lot of reasons. Like, that's where we got like the warlock tank, because you needed a warlock tank specifically for one of the bosses. But they also did an insane amount of damage if you did it right.
Did you not do Nax at all in original?
I did.
Okay, that's where the warlock tank came from. That's a lot of what you got in Burning Crusade was basically just Nax stuff.
Right, but at the time, not a lot of players experienced Nax Ramos 1.0.
Yeah, that's why I thought you might not have.
No, I did. I could tell the story about us hunter tanking Razuvius again, but like, there was some weird stuff. But Burning Crusade really started to shift gears, and because I remember for a long time, like, I had switched to enhancement shaman. I was Horde.
Okay, that I think that might explain it too. I think Horde had more melee because Horde had shaman in.
Yep,
in
enhancement shaman.
Horde had shaman in classic and what we call vanilla. And those, therefore, they had Wind Fury Totem.
Which was ridiculous. Wind Fury
Totem, yeah, Wind Fury Totem got nerfed going into TBC.
And don't forget Bloodlust, because Bloodlust was group only. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and that was Horde only for vanilla. So
yeah, so you had like five, you wanted four or five shaman, if not more, so you could put all the melee in groups with them and just basically have them all, you know, set it off and. People would go, blah, 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 and, you know, turn into Ginsu knives. Since they got changed, they made it, like, raid-wide. And when the Alliance got Shaman, they nerfed Wind Fury. They made, her version of Bloodlust that the Alliance had raid-wide. There's going to be a lot of interesting changes because a lot of people who've been playing just WoW Classic and who never played originally, I want to see if the same stuff that blindsided people then blindsides people now. Or if, because we know what's going to happen, guilds are going to be ready for it. That's fascinating to me, and I want to observe that. I definitely think you're going to see a lot less melee because Burning Crusaders and Raids started doing stuff that really just penalized being melee.
Yeah, it did.
And they didn't do as much of that in vanilla. Nax started to. Like, the safety dance, in my opinion, is just an absolute middle finger to melee. But in general, the mechanics in TBC are gonna be gruelingly punishing. And since you lose stuff like Wind Fury Totem, you lose Bloodlust being per group, or Heroism if you're playing Alliance. I remember I had to level Alliance Shaman just to get Heroism, just so my wife could have me cast it every time it was up while she tried to tame a wolf in the swamp. And she did tame that wolf too, the Grim Totem Spirit Guide. She still has it. So yeah, it'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, and I'll be interested to see players kind of experience all of that for it maybe for the first time in some of these cases, which I think will be interesting. I also think that this was the last patch, so that means this was after downranking was leveled out as well, I believe.
Oh yeah, that's in the middle of the expansion.
Because
I was downranking my brains out up until...
What was it, 2-3?
I don't remember exactly when, but I remember... I was doing dungeons like the original Caverns of Time dungeons. I was doing Black Morass, and I was on a shaman, and I was just rank one chain heal.
Rank three.
No, I used rank one. I didn't even use rank three.
Yeah, rank three was the. I was gonna say rank three was mathematically. And I remember because I got a lot of crap for this back then, but rank three was mathematically the most mana efficient to heal ratio, and it was a smart heal.
Absolutely. You're totally right. I used rank one because I didn't know any better.
Fair.
And more importantly, I didn't need to know any better because even at rank one,
oh yeah, it was still great.
I was just hitting, like, I literally just tapped, like I was a drinky bird, tapping the button every time. I just would target the tank, and if you weren't, like, if I had to heal somebody else, I would just switch over. I think that focus was in the game at this point, because I seem to recall having a focus target
who
was
one of the range. Focus macros were a thing back then, focus and then target last target.
I would go and just target the one who the range character I had as my focus target, and just 1-1-1-1-1 okay, back to the tank, 1-1-1 And because I had Earth Shield, I just put Earth Shield on the tank. So when I switched off of him to hit the one button, I'd be okay because I knew he'd get, you know, the Earth Shield would take care of him until I got back to him.
Yeah. So, and for those of you that maybe don't know what we're talking about, because I know that there are people that played after this and maybe didn't experience it, or maybe just never heard about this before. Back during ye olden days when we were, you know, walking uphill both ways to kill dragons on the digital snow, you had to train in your different ranks of all of your spells. So as you leveled up, you gained different levels that you could then purchase from the trainer. It was very much an old affectation of like D&D second edition where you paid gold to level up, right? Your character then could choose, because none of the previous ranks went away, what rank of that spell you used. So you could have a rank 1, 2, and 3 chain heal, or rank 1, 2, 3, and 4 chain heal on your bars if you so chose. And in some cases, not just shaman, but there are a lot of classes that downranking, where it was using a lower version of the spell from your spell book, was the best option. And up until midway through Burning Crusade, that's what you did. So, like,
yep.
I never ran out of mana in Burning Crusade until they made this switch, because I could put more healing out than any other class by using that rank 3, because it used way less mana proportionally, healed a ton, triggered off of all the crits and mastery stuff that were available at the time, or all the secondary stats basically that were available at the time, and
basically if
then
you had
targeted to- it was sorry and then it targeted too, like when we say smart heal, it targeted the lowest health players first.
The thing with like chain heal is great if you had the time to cast a spell.
Yep.
Instant spells were not shaman's friends, really.
No, you as a shaman, you were trying to get that haste breakpoint to 2 second casting.
Yeah, but it really depended. Like that way downranking worked. Downranking was really good if you had the time to cast a spell. If you could basically park yourself somewhere and you knew you'd get some uninterrupted casting time, then downranking was brilliant. You'd only uprank when you knew I've got 3 seconds, and then that's all the spell casting I'm going to get to do. Then you'd want to use your top rank spell.
Because, you get one cast.
If I'm only going to get one cast, I want the biggest spell I got. And a lot of this also keyed into regeneration, because a lot of the stuff that gave you mana regen was triggered by casting a spell. So casting your lowest rank spell, or the lowest rank that actually efficiently healed, like in this case Joe was saying rank 3, and he's probably right, it would still trigger the same mana regeneration that casting your rank 4 did. So there was never a good reason to cast rank 4 unless it was going to be the only spell you got to cast for like 20 seconds. If you wanted to get everybody's health as high as you could as fast as you could. And I remember like shaman were just chain heal fiends.
Yep, that's all you did.
You had other spells, but you almost never used them. Like, you'd put Earth Shield on the tank. That wasn't until, I want to say Wrath, they put in...
Healing Rain.
Yeah, Healing Rain. And wasn't there, like, the one that triggered off of your, like, weapon?
Earth Living Weapon. Yeah.
So yeah, Earth Living Weapon.
Earth Living Weapon was very similar to, if you play now, Embalmer's Oil. Very similar effect.
But it was, so it was something that put a heal over time on people when you cast a heal on them.
And you wanted Earth Living because, and that's why you stuck with Chain Heal, it would trigger off of each individual, potentially each individual jump of Chain Heal.
So yeah, if you hit 4 people with Chain Heal, you had 4 chances for Earth Living Weapon to go off.
Yep.
And they could all have they'd all have a heal over time on them now.
Yep.
It also worked really well. I want to say it worked really well with Valinir.
Yes.
Because the bubble.
Yeah, and the bubble could self-replicate at that point, too, because of the way that Earth Living Weapon worked. It was ridiculous. Like, you could cast one chain heal and watch a bubble stay on that first group, if it triggered, for three times the duration that it was supposed to, because Earth Living had a chance to proc it, and they had to go fix a whole bunch of stuff. But that's Wrath. But a lot of this weird chicanery type stuff originated in Burning Crusade, which this patch 2.4.3 is just after all of that had been sorted out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, some of it had been sorted
out. Some of it, not all of it.
There was specifically the stuff that we're talking about with downranking.
Yeah.
Because downranking was, I loved it. Don't get me wrong. I was sad when they took it out, but yeah, downranking had a lot of negative effects. But anyway, we've talked about this a lot. Point being, that's going to be what it runs on. It will be running on the finalized state of the Burning Crusade. So if you were looking to get in there and tank on a feral druid, because that's what they were called back then, just feral. They didn't have a second spec for tanking. If you're looking to go into the Burning Crusade and main tank on a feral druid, be warned that you are not going to have the massive advantage that they had, and you are still not going to have certain benefits that they didn't get until later. But okay, we should talk about... Right now, the Diablo 3 PTR for patch 2.7.0 is out. It's been going for the past week. One of the things it's testing is... They've made some significant changes to your various followers. You remember the Scoundrel, the Templar, and the Enchantress?
Yep.
They all get gear in all their slots now. Not just a few select. They eat everything. Helmet, boots, chestplate, everything.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Not only that, if they have like a full set that has certain effects or legendaries that have certain effects, you'll get those effects from them.
Yeah. Whew.
So if you have like... I don't know how it's going to work for like specific set pieces for classes. Like if you know, I don't think you can put your barbarian set on them and have them get it, but like there's sets that aren't related to the class and legendaries that don't have specifically class related abilities, you'll get them if your follower's wearing them. That is a strange and interesting concept. I find myself wondering if that's a test for something they're going to be doing in Diablo 4.
Go ahead. I was just going to say that, like, this smacks of a test run. Like, it's really cool. I think this is really cool. This harkens back to... it has been a while since I've played Diablo 2, folks, so... but, like, kidding out followers then. Not going to say it was exactly the same, but I remember it having more slots than the Diablo 3 followers. But this is really cool and really neat. And the fact that you get... the effects of those items is crazy. That is just way opening up the amount of weird combinations you can do. And I don't know if this is something that they're going to be testing for, you know, inclusion in Diablo 4 going forward, but I kind of hope it is, because that would be a really cool feature to continue on in the future.
Yeah, we don't know how they're going to even do followers in Diablo 4 yet, but one of the things that's interesting to me about this is that, for one thing, it basically gives... I don't know if you guys have noticed this. It's significantly harder to run a Greater Rift solo, even with a follower, than it is to run one with even just one friend.
Yeah, because of they're built off of procs and set bonuses.
Even with the fact that, you know, stuff gets harder when you bring in a friend, I generally prefer to have at least one other person with me than to play Diablo 3 completely solo. This will be a big benefit for people who want to play Diablo 3 entirely solo, who don't want to or don't have someone to play it with.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to cough there.
No, you're fine.
But yeah, so I'm interested in seeing the list of the sets that work with them, the list of legendaries that work with them. But it is, with this happening, we're now basically, the PTR will probably likely not end until the end of this week at the earliest. That means that we're probably not going to see season end till at least the 14th, and I personally think it'll be the 21st at the earliest. I will not expect it before the 21st. In fact, if it didn't happen at all this month, if it didn't end until April, I would not be surprised. And the reason for that is they want to try and give people heads up as much as they can. So even if the PTR finishes this week and it's all good and they get everything they want out of it and everything's running smoothly and there's no mistakes and no screw-ups, and also someone comes to your house with a big bag of candy, because why not, while you're dreaming, sure, you can have a cake. Here's some cake. Yeah, Blizzard will give you some cake while we're having a miracle. But assuming all that goes down, it's still going to take 2 or 3 weeks to finish up the season. Like, you can't just say, okay, the PTR is going down, we're ending the season next week. You got to give people some time. So yeah, I don't know exactly when we're going to see that this next season coming up. For one thing, like the follower thing isn't seasonal. That's going to be happening during the season, but it will work for both people in the season and not in the season.
Yeah, it's just a thing.
The PTR has not actually got anything for the season on it, as far as we can tell. There's no real changes. So yeah, what's it going to even be? Are they going to test it? Are they testing it? I mean, that's if the PTR continues on for the next couple of weeks so they can then start testing the new season, that means it'll take even longer. And with Diablo 3 in the state, like Diablo 3 is in a really weird place where they can do stuff like this. They can experiment around with like big changes if they want to. But, you know, we know that Diablo 2 Resurrected is coming out this year. We know that Diablo Immortal is coming out this year. We know that Diablo 4 is probably next year. So there's a lot of Diablo coming down the pipe. They can probably take a little bit of time on their seasons. They can have them come out more. They can have them be longer. Like, up until this last season, the average season length was between 14 and 16 weeks. Last season was 18 weeks. This season's looking like it's going to be heading for 16, 17 weeks. I think that might be the future trend for season length, that they might be between 16 and 18 weeks, because it's just, it gives you more time to test things. It gives you more time to like let people play them out. So, but that's just what I'm thinking.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's a pretty good thought. A pretty good solid deduction, I think. And honestly, longer seasons is not necessarily a bad thing. I think it's just more Diablo content, really.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Ultimately, we'll see like how, if we get, we're going to get Resurrected and Immortal this year, we're told. If Resurrected came out in the summer, which I'm not saying it will, but if Resurrected came out in the summer, Diablo 3 is going to basically have a slow period because it's coming out on consoles. It's coming out on pretty much every console simultaneously. It's coming out on the Switch, Xbox, and I think both the One and the XS, and both PlayStation 4 and 5. Yeah, people are going to be playing that. I would not bet against Diablo 2 Resurrected here. Let me put it that way. So I feel like the Diablo 3 team might be like, yeah, we can be more experimental. We can see what works. We can do interesting stuff because, you know, no one's going to be watching us.
Yeah, it definitely works in their advantage, right? Like at least as from that perspective. So,
yeah. But anyway, I believe it's time to move on to emails. So, at this point I hand it off to you to say things, Joe.
Well, do you want to do your spiel?
All right, I do the spiel. Why did I can't remember who does the spiels? My God, what am I here for? Hold on. Small moment of panic. Okay, taking a breath. Anyway, if you have an email for the show, you can send it to podcast@blizzardwatch.com with the subject line podcast or Blizzard Watch, so we know it's for the show. Or you can go to our Discord, and we have a Patreon Q and Podcast Questions channel where our patrons, that's the lovely people who pay for everything we do so we get to keep doing it, They can go and ask the questions there. Or you can go to the Q Questions channel, which is not for patrons, but we do go there second. And quite frankly, every question in there was for Lore Watch this week anyway. So, yeah, if you don't mind, Joe.
Not at all. Our first question comes from 6K. Question for the podcast. So we all know Tyrande became the Night Warrior, but what does that mean exactly? Like, what does being the Night Warrior give you? Can she now run faster than a locomotive? Did she get super strength? Ability to dissolve Velcro? Did she get a gun? What exactly does being a Night Warrior give you then? You know, not being a Night Warrior and just training hard and doing 100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups, 100 squats, and 10 kilometer runs every day.
I mean, she can summon airstrikes. Like, no, I'm not kidding. Like, she just holds her hand up at one point, and the entire Horde contingent around her gets hit with like super moon fire from the sky. That's not sarcasm, and I can say she can summon airstrikes. I think she was already super strong by definition.
Human measurement, probably, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Or even orc, because, you know, night elves toss orcs around pretty easily. Not Tyrande, but Malfurion just grabbed like a troll by the throat and just slammed him around like he was a toy. Night elves are not weak. They're pretty strong. So she already had that, but it definitely seems like she's got, like, she doesn't seem to be like, she's not flying around and shooting lasers out of her eyes or anything, but when she does choose to, she definitely can call upon some ridiculous levels of power. She took out those things that Sylvanas sent after her.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go to Torghast and you see her there, she's striding over the destroyed hulks of the jailer's, you know, constructs. She's not like, they're not really even impeding her. So I'm not, I don't, she didn't get a gun. She uses a bow still when she bothers to shoot people. I think she probably could dissolve Velcro, but not specific Velcro. Just pretty much anything she hit with that blast would probably get eaten up. I don't know. Do they have locomotives in Azeroth? I guess they must. Yeah,
they do. There was an entire boss based around it and on a tier. The trains exist.
Yeah. Okay. She's probably faster than they are then. But she might have been beforehand. Keep in mind too, she already kind of was like ridiculously powerful as the High Priestess. So, but yeah, I don't think we have anything definitive on exactly what the Night Warrior gives you. But it's pretty clear by watching what she does now that she is the Night Warrior that she basically has a push button things blow up ability now. Like, it feels like the Night Warrior's power isn't something you can easily control to just do whatever you want with it. It feels more along the lines of, it's like you are holding a gigantic cannon. Essentially, Taranda has the wave motion gun from, you know, Space Battleship Yamato. Like, she seriously, like, she can go, and when she gets all the way up, big blast comes out and things fall down.
Yeah. I think, just to kind of get in here on the mix a little bit, we don't know the full extent of what being the Night Warrior actually gives you. We know some of the terrible downsides just because of what we've interacted with certain folks inside of Ardenweald. But it's one of those things where they never really sat down and defined, here's what being the Night Warrior gives you. The only thing for certain besides just more power is it seems to amplify aggression almost. And I'm not saying that Tyrande isn't justified in her rage. I absolutely believe she is. But combining what we've heard from certain folks, I can't remember their two spirits' names right now. I think one's
Gadarin, like, and his boyfriend?
Yeah, Gadarin and like Theadrin or something like that.
Theadrin, yeah, I think.
Is that it consumes you and forces you to sort of like explode from the inside out. I'm paraphrasing. But it's one of those things where like, she's definitely acting probably more aggressive and less self-aware than I think she normally would if she was not the Night Warrior. Like, she doesn't...
Keep in mind that this is a woman who killed her own people to get Illidan out at one point. So she was, it's not like she wasn't aggressive already.
Right, but this is like taking it up a notch.
I'm just saying, this is like saying, okay, we want to get Keith Moon, but we want him to be like, we're going to amplify his carousing and inability to control himself. Like, are you kidding me? This is Keith Moon. He was already there. In essence, it does to make a joke, but it's a joke that I think actually has a point. She can go Super Saiyan now.
Yeah.
And it does kind of feel like that's what she can do. We know that because of like Thiarin and Kadarin, and if I'm spelling his name wrong, pronouncing it wrong, I apologize. They talk about how the Night Warrior was powerful enough to drive an old god away. Like, they destroyed an old god with its power. So,
you know, the thing that we spent an entire expansion gathering power and using a series of Titan facilities to do. Yeah, the Night Warrior did that.
And I think to a certain degree, like, the downsides of the Night Warrior, the fact that it shakes the person apart, shows that it builds an intensity as it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she is not at full power yet. And when she gets to full power, she's going to blow up. So there's a lot to it that we have yet to see that we don't know yet. But I definitely think it's more than just going for a jog and you know, I don't think we get a Rocky-style training montage and then, you know, Taranda's out killing Horde. I think this is definitely a step above that.
Yeah, and honestly, if it comes down to a fight between Taranda and One Punch Man, because I know that's where you were going with your 100 push-ups, etc., my money's on Taranda. Just going to throw that out there. Our next question, people who watch from the cold. I have a lot of questions about what's going on in Diablo. With Diablo 2 Resurrected, Immortal, Diablo 3, and Diablo 4 will have a lot of lore to reconcile, and I'm not sure I understand which game comes when. Diablo, then Diablo 2, and then Diablo 3, and then Immortal, right? Because Immortal is coming out after Diablo 3, so how does Diablo 4 follow Diablo 3? Thanks for clearing all this up and explaining the plot of Diablo Immortal and how it follows Diablo 3. This is from Joey Jojo Jr. Shabadoo. It does not follow Diablo 3, and I'll let Matt rant in a second about it or explain in depth, but it is between Diablo 2 and Diablo 3.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I don't really have a rant involved with your chronology. It was accurate. Joe, and you're wrong. And here's why. No, he's totally right. That's how, in terms of how the stories go, they were pretty straightforward up until Immortal. And if you take Immortal out of it and just look at the games, the publication number is it's Diablo, Diablo 2, Diablo 3, Diablo 4. That's Immortal makes it complicated because it's between 2 and 3. Essentially, it's like a retroactive 2.5, but just think Diablo, Diablo 2, Diablo Immortal, Diablo 3, Diablo 4, and you're fine. And if you just want a numbers thing, it's always 1, 2, 3, 4. It's not like none of them are prequels exactly. I guess Immortal's kind of a prequel.
Kinda.
But it's a prequel in a series where it's actually in between.
Yeah, it's like an it's like an interstitial episode.
It's like a Lost Tales.
Yeah.
But in terms of how the story works, Diablo is the story about how a town falls to darkness because the Archbishop found an ancient artifact, and it turned out that the Archbishop was himself evil and was looking for that ancient artifact, which we don't find out until Diablo 2, I believe, and used it to wake up one of the three prime devils, like the greater evils of this world.
The titular Diablo.
Yes. Diablo 2, the hero of Diablo 1 thought it would be a really good idea to jam the Soul Stone with Diablo in it in his face. It was wrong. And...
Listen, if shoving weird demonic stones into my forehead to keep the world safe is wrong, I don't want to be right.
And he wasn't right. But the story of the game is basically a bunch of heroes following in his wake, trying to prevent the destruction and death as the demon inside of him takes over his body and uses him to complete its purpose, which is to free the other two great devils of the game, Mephisto and Baal. They are freed, and chaos ensues. To prevent the world from being corrupted by Baal at the end of Diablo 2, Lord of Destruction, the angel Tyriel shatters the World Stone and in an explosion that consumes his physical body.
Real quick, you're missing that part where the stones that they had been using to imprison the primevals were pieces of this World Stone.
Yeah, that's true. The Soul Stones were created using pieces of the World Stone as well. So Baal has corrupted the World Stone, and therefore, in order to prevent the World Stone from corrupting all of Sanctuary and turning it to the demons, Tyriel destroys it, releasing the massive amount of power contained within it, because the World Stone was a relic from the creation of the universe. It was called the Eye of Anu, and it was essentially like a piece of the original primordial Anu that could create worlds. That's why it was called the World Stone. He destroys it, and so Diablo Immortal is the story of a bunch of adventurers traveling the world and collecting up the pieces of the shattered World Stone so that the demons that are collecting them don't get to use their power to grow even more powerful and destructive. That's what you're doing in Diablo Immortal. Diablo 3 is something like 20 years after Diablo 2. The wizened elder, Deckard Cain, who you've met in both Diablo and Diablo 2, has basically traveled back to Tristram because he believes in a prophecy that a thing is going to fall from the sky, heralding the end of the world. A thing falls from the sky and heralds the end of the world. It turns out to be Tyriel. He's lost his memory and his sword, but he has fallen from the heavens, trying to warn us about a great evil. We then find out what that evil is, go forth, confront it, attempt to stop it, fall right into the plot of Diablo, who ends up resurrecting itself with all seven of the evils combined in one demonic body, and invades heaven. We then go to heaven and beat him up. Even though he's strong enough now to beat up all of heaven, we're strong enough now to beat up him, because we're the Nephilim, and the destruction of the World Stone has caused humans to begin to raise up to the rank of Nephilim and gain access to the enormous power they possess. Scared by this, the angel Malthiel, who's the Archangel of Wisdom, decides he wants to be to associate with the power of death, calls himself the Angel of Death, and steals the Black Soul Stone that was used to contain all the demons in Diablo 3, which he then uses to try and kill every single human in the world.
He only 75% succeeds.
Yeah. They're talking about, high numbers. But the point is, that's the end of Diablo 3. We stop Malthiel before he can kill everybody in Sanctuary, but a lot of people die. And as a result of this, the world is basically, it's like, if you look at Europe during the Black Plague.
Yeah.
It's like so many people died that their entire social order got destroyed. Certain kingdoms have completely collapsed. People are basically living in little huts and villages, separated from each other. Nations are crumbling, and the world is completely disorganized. And somebody thinks it would be a great idea to bring back Lilith, the demon that, along with Anarius, created Sanctuary in the first place. And that's basically the premise of this game, is someone has brought Lilith back, and we have to decide if it's good or bad for the world. And that's it. That's the five games.
Yeah, it's basically post-apocalypse, followed by another post-apocalypse, by another one, and so on and so forth.
Things keep going to crap. I think that's my wife described it. She's like, Diablo, everything's still worse.
Yeah. Instead of singing everything is awesome, everything is awful 100% applies to this.
Yeah. Everything is awful. Everything is terrible. Everything's bad. You know, it's just... and it gets worse. I think there's one thing you could say is that every Diablo game gets worse.
For the inhabitants. Yes. Let's be clear. We're talking about story-wise. We're not talking about gameplay-wise, because the gameplay keeps getting better.
But yeah, in terms of, like, you know, the fate of the people of Sanctuary just keeps going downhill. It's just like a giant bunch of rocks falling on people continuously.
Yeah, and consider it's getting worse, because it's like, yeah, so Diablo 3, I used to live in this town, and then my wife tried to kill me, and all of my children that, you know, died to various plagues started coming out of the ground, and then my neighbor tried to, like, eat my face. I have no clue what's going on, and now it's even worse than that.
Yeah, it's... Now everybody died, and now we're all forced to live in this village. And
now the monsters are braver than they ever were before. Because that's
why wouldn't they be? Because everyone's dead. Exactly. No one stop them. Yeah. No. It's so. Yeah. But that's basically the plot of the overarching plot. We'd have to do an entire episode, and maybe we should do an episode on the lore of
you know what? Hey, you guys, you make sure you comment, send us things. You want us to do an entire lore watch dedicated to the story of Diablo so far? I'm perfectly fine doing it. Just let us know.
Yeah, but that's a bare bones summary of what's going on.
Yeah, and yeah, there's just a lot there. And honestly, hopefully the order helps you get that straight, or keep that straight moving forward, because it can be a little bit confusing, especially with Immortal being the oddball out. But I think that'll answer that one. Our next question. Hey, Watchers, do you think Blizzard could start new classic servers? Maybe like just a couple every 6 months or so? I missed out on a couple phases because of real life stuff, and it would be awesome if they had constantly rotating servers so people can jump in. And this is from Elisof the Belf Pally. They could. I don't know if they would. That is a massive technical undertaking. You're talking about spinning up essentially a server every time you want to do it, or wiping something clean and rolling back. Now, they could do that if they wanted to. They could have a set of servers, or a server specifically set up, where there is a timed wipe, where every 6 months all of the phases reset back to zero, or whatever their starting point was when they released Classic. They could do that. I don't know if they would. I also don't know if enough players want that. One of the things that I think maybe is an older mindset, maybe I'm going to show my game age here a little bit more than I usually do, but when you hit, you know, max level in vanilla or classic, it was a thing. And even going through all those events, those were things that, like, you experienced, and you didn't want to have all of your progress wiped and done over again. Now, I know some players on some of the illegal servers or secret servers that exist out there do that. I don't know how their decision-making process goes for that, and I don't know if that's something Blizzard is interested in. And, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they would, but I think they could.
What you're describing reminds me a lot of how seasons work in Diablo 3.
It does, yeah.
Where you basically start off at zero, and you can go through everything all over again. I'll be upfront with you. This is just my opinion, my take on it. I could be wrong. Maybe Blizzard plans to do a robust support of original WoW Classic servers and do things to make sure they stay up and competitive and fresh. I do not think that's what's going to happen. I think your servers are basically, this is it. They are on life support now, and there will be nothing further for you. There's no new stuff coming. There's no resets coming. If you don't want to play WoW Classic, then move on, because I think they're going to do Burning Crusade, where some of those servers are going to just be the server moves to being Burning Crusade servers, or you can stay on, like, there'll be certain servers that are going to stay WoW Classic servers.
Yep.
And you can be on those if you want to. But I think the closest you're going to get to that is they might start outright WoW they might start Burning Crusade Classic servers that are just for Burning Crusade Classic that are brand new.
That start from zero. That start from Classic zero, right?
Yeah, and then you could level up and do, but even then it would be at the point where all that stuff had been released. Everything would be released instead of waiting for it to come out. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't expect at any point in time they are going to look at Classic stuff and say, okay, let's put on this Classic server where it's basically just, you know, it starts off with just Mountain Core and Onyxia, and then we move, like, we release other stuff in phases and we release the PvP in phases. I think they're done doing that for Classic, straight up. It's done. The fork has been stuck in it. It's a potato. It has done everything they wanted it to do. And now, if you like that stuff, could you have what you wanted? You've now got a server where you can go do all the old stuff. You can go see the original world. There's no flying, none of that. It is as close to what the servers were really like as they could be. But I don't think they're going to go back and reset any of them. I don't think they will.
If they do what you said potentially, and you do that with like the Burning Crusade servers where it starts from zero, I mean, again, like you said, it's not going to be exactly the same.
Because all the events will be out immediately. Yeah, so it will already be there.
And even if they do Wrath Classic or whatever they call it, it would be the same thing, right? Like, it would just be...
The thing about Wrath Classic is where you get into a weird area. And it's not been announced, so I'm only going to discuss this briefly, but Wrath Classic is when they started taking content out.
Yep.
Wrath is when they started taking out Naxx.
Yeah, you like Naxxramas? Well, it's gone. Oh, now it's back again with a different flavor.
Yeah, and it felt very different.
Very.
So, I don't know. I don't know. Like I said, it reminds me of Diablo 3 Seasons, and there is a certain amount of... There's something cool about, you know, starting over and leveling up again and getting all that stuff again. But it's a different game. WoW and Diablo don't play the same way.
The one thing I would say is this is a really good example of something that would be feedback that should be provided back to Blizzard. If this is something a lot of players want, then it might be something that they consider doing.
They're doing what Burning Crusade Classic because players said we want it. That's you know, if nobody had wanted it, they wouldn't have done it. They're doing the entirety of what Classic is because there's enough demand to motivate people to subscribe.
Yeah, and if that becomes a thing where a sufficient number of people, just like Burning Crusade, say, hey, we want to do this thing, they might start looking into it. But I think I really do believe that these are always intended to be time capsules, right? Almost like time capsules regaining some lost content in a manner that players could revisit that's no longer available on live servers. So, and I think they've accomplished that, and I think they've done a pretty good job of doing that. And it may be not exactly what everybody wanted out of their Classic servers, but I think they've reached a pretty good medium. But again, give them that constructive feedback, put it on the forums, see if other players will band in on it. I understand going to the forums is a crapshoot one way or another, but they do pay attention to that. They actually look for that feedback. Provide it. You never know what will happen in the future. Our next question comes from Speed Lancer. The question for the podcast, is it me or are the Covenant campaigns missing pretty big parts of their stories? Just before reset, I cleared Denathrius on LFR with my warlock, who is ascended, and though I didn't get the cinematic like I was supposed to from the quest turn-in, I did see it. The Naru is just there. I know she's in one of the Revendreth dungeons, but having completed the Venthyr Covenant campaigns on my DK main, that particular dungeon just isn't part of the story. You don't get set there, you don't get a quest to go there. Did I just completely miss it somehow? And as for my warlock, you don't even get introduced to Devos in the Ascended story, but suddenly she reveals herself as leader of the Forsworn. I did notice her in the hall dressed in her original white attire and thought it was odd that I didn't even know she was there before. Are the other Covenant campaigns missing pieces like this? So I think that's the end of that question. I think that's not entirely accurate. I think a lot of that's baked into the leveling experience.
Yeah, I was just going to say, when you level through Bastion the first time, you see a figure who is cloaked in shadow that is very clearly Devos. I mean, it's, you hear her talk, you see her, and then when you run the dungeon, it turns out Devos is behind it, and you see Devos at the end, and you fight Devos, and that's your introduction. It's not necessarily, they haven't put absolutely everything in the campaign questing.
Yeah.
Some of it is just there in the world or in dungeons for you to discover, but it's all connected. If you haven't run that dungeon, you won't get to see Devos running the dungeon. You won't get to see her because it's them attacking. That's Devos attacking, attempting to take the Archon out. So the Archon's really got bad luck this expansion. People keep trying to take her out.
Yeah.
I will say that it's kind of actually similar to something we were talking about on the pre-show, and I'm not going to drag back in that conversation because different.
We'll be here for a while.
At the same time, there's a little bit of disconnect on the storytelling methods that can kind of leave you to like not knowing what you're supposed to know. Like, what did I see? When did I actually see this? And it can be tricky, and you can miss it. And sometimes you're not even missing it. It is actually the case that in some cases, I'll say it's a blink and you'll miss it. And it's even to some degree with Devos. There is no moment where Devos just, you know, is standing there being good and then pulls off her.
Like, yeah, it was I, Devos.
Yeah, there is none of that. You just find out. I believe it's like someone's like, Devos? Like, you know, after you, you know, someone's like, Devos is behind this? Oh my God, you're going to have to go in and stop her. It's that kind of thing. But it's there. I can't speak to every covenant. I've really only played two to any like length, and I've really only played the Night Fae to completion.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I will say that this expansion does feel a little bit different in how it presents your entrance into dungeons, like your quests to go there. It definitely is a different type of it, and I think there might be some variation between the Covenant campaigns, but I wouldn't say that. I don't think they're missing large chunks of the stories. I think that Matt's right, and it's just a little bit of a disjointed storytelling where it sort of relies on you as a player to sort of piece it together in the proper order to understand what's going on, just because of how things have to be laid out. Like, it's one of those things where the story is coherent, but because of the way the game systems work, it kind of chops it up a little bit in a weird manner for you to digest. It's not completely straightforward. So, anything else to add to that one?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. We have one last question here, and this is to the violent renderer of flesh and screamer of bloody mayhem, Rossi.
No, that's not
mayhem and Rossi. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, that's you, man. You're
apparently the I'm the violent one. Projecting. Sorry. I'm really afraid that they're going to mess up Diablo II's remaster after Warcraft Reforged ended up not doing a lot of reforging. Please reassure me it will be good. Also, is it worth playing if you've already played the original? What do you think about remakes and remasters like this? I've heard that Final Fantasy VII Remake was good, but also not really a remaster. So is this going to end up like that? Help me. Era Kulov. I've seen...
Yeah,
just little bits and pieces of gameplay.
I'm gonna say this: that I can't promise you that it'll be good. I mean that
we're not making the game. We can't make that promise.
Even the people making the game can't always make that promise. You know, things happen. But I will say that from what I saw at BlizzCon, they seem to understand what the stakes are, and they understand what people want. That they don't want a game they're not out to make a game that significantly reinvents this game.
Yeah.
They don't want a game that plays differently. They don't want a game that feels different. They want to give you Diablo 2 just prettier. And every place where they have made a change, it is in the service of preserving as much as possible while allowing people to have conveniences that they would have, you know, if the game were made today, they would have had them. For instance, you're going to get to have a shared stash because people were just making mule characters and sending all their stuff to the mule character anyway. So why not just let them have a shared stash? It's stuff like that. But I don't feel like this is not going to be a remake. This is not Final Fantasy VII. I don't want to spoil anything if you haven't played Final Fantasy VII Remake. But Final Fantasy VII Remake is a remake.
Yeah, it's not a remaster.
Yeah, it's a remake. It is a remake with different game systems and a different story.
Yeah.
Like, that's all I'll say. If you haven't played it, I mean, I don't even like Sony as a gaming platform. I don't like PlayStation. And it was like one of the few games that I was like, you must play this. If you can play this, you must play this. Go borrow someone's PlayStation. I don't care. It was stunning and spectacular, but it's not what Diablo II Resurrected is trying to be. Absolutely not. It's trying to be a remaster. And the people from Vicarious Visions, who are the people who are working on it, know how to remaster.
Yes, yes, they do.
They put out the Tony Hawk 1 and 2 box compilation remaster thing, which is being hailed as one of the best remasters ever made. They've made plenty of other remasters. This is what they do. They understand that you don't... There's the core gameplay loop, you don't touch it.
Yeah, they know what to make a quality of life change versus what's a core aspect that you just don't touch, right? Like, and Tony Hawk is the perfect example of that. It really, really is.
Yeah. So, I mean, is it going to be good? I think it will probably be good. I feel like if you liked Diablo 2, you should like this because it's basically, they've even said, we're not actually even changing the engine. We are running this on the same engine. And that's what it's going to be on. We're just, you know, then putting 3D graphics over it so that, for instance, when a sword drops, it will look like the sword you equip. That kind of change, not changes to how the game plays. They were very upfront about that. And I think that that's a good move.
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic when it comes to it. I don't think this is going to wind up being like Warcraft 3 Reforged. And I think the biggest part of that is Warcraft 3 kind of went through its own sort of like development hell with changing of teams, weird things going on with the decision-making process in the middle, a third party handling some of it that wasn't internal to ActiBlizzard. Now with Vicarious Visions is part of the ActiBlizzard family. They're wholly owned. Their only goal is to work on this, and they've proven that they know they have the chops to do it, and they have the chops to do it the right way. And from what I'm seeing, because some people have actually already gotten technical alpha access, at least in small quantities, and it's content creators, but it does exist out there. You can find some folks that have it, and it looks exactly like they're promising so far. It's literally 3D graphics, updated graphics, updated some lighting effects, and that's it. Like, it's Diablo 2. And that is a good thing, because Diablo 2 is often hailed as everybody's favorite Diablo game, or at least if that was your first Diablo game, really. And you don't want to alienate that group, but also the difference between Diablo 2 and Diablo 3 isn't as vast as like core mechanics go, right? There's some differences obviously with the skill trees and things like that, but there isn't a whole lot that you need to shift to bring it up to modern standards in that regard. Like, you give some quality of life improvements to the players, fantastic. Now you can still go and pay with things when in Staff of Jordans. Like, you can still go and do that.
Yeah, for me, what I would say is I think it depends on the game. Like I've said, I already think the Final Fantasy VII remake is just spectacular. It's a stunning achievement. But it's a very different animal than a remaster.
Yeah.
For a remaster, what you want is you want the original game. And, I mean, for some people, that's exactly what they did want from Final Fantasy VII, so the remake has kind of thrown them off. I think that Reforged actually upset people because for a couple reasons. One is stuff like the mods and add-on situation wasn't handled well. The fact that they did make some changes to how, if you were playing Warcraft 3 and you weren't going to get the remake, you weren't going to get Reforged, you just had Warcraft 3, they made changes to the way Battle.net worked for Warcraft 3.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very unpopular.
It was very much regarded as a bad move, and everybody disapproved.
And finally, the fact is that people kind of thought it was going to be more than it was.
Well, and that's part of that development hell, right? Like, there was a lot of weird promises and interviews. And at one point, I don't remember what it was, but I remember there was an interview where they were talking about changing the story to match WoW. And, like, people latched onto that, and then they didn't.
And they didn't update the cinematics, which they're absolutely doing in Diablo 2.
They flat out said they were.
Yeah. Diablo 2 Remastered, that's the best decision they could make. If they just did that, I would consider it a successful remaster. Because if you watch the cinematics, they're very cool, but it's a bunch of lumpy potatoes. Because it was on, you know, this game came out in 2000. and digital effects. I mean, if you've looked at older cinematics that Blizzard put out, it's no fault of their own. This is the best you could do with the computers of the time. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it's a bunch of lumpy potatoes. That's just how it is. So yeah, the team that made, if you go back and just go look at Diablo 3 cinematics sometime, they are effing amazing. They are so good. Oh my God, when Malthiel walks into the room and kills all the Horadrim and takes the Black Soulstone, amazing. Diablo shows up at the gates of heaven and fights Imperius. Amazing. These are incredible cinematics. And they've only gotten better. It's 2021. The cinematics are going to be great. I am so looking forward to that. That's all they really need to do. The fact that they're also making the gameplay look better, that's just nice. That's cake. That's all I really want from a remaster. I just want a remaster to be the game. Like one of the remasters that came out a few years back, the original Fable got a remaster. And it's just the original Fable. It doesn't play differently. It's just changed up the models a bit. And I liked it because that's what I wanted. I wanted it to be Fable. If I wanted it to be some other game, I'd play some other game.
Yep.
So, yeah, I, again, can't tell you it's going to be good, but I am optimistic that I think that they know what they're doing here.
Yeah, I would agree. And I don't really think there's much more to say about it because, again, we won't know until we get into the alpha or if we get into the technical alpha or we get into the beta and we see what they're doing with it and actually get some hands-on experience with it. But I think cautiously optimistic is a really good way to put it. But Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience.
Thank you very much, Joe. Again, guys, if you have something to send to the show, question-wise, you can do so via podcast@blizzardwatch.com with a subject line podcast of Blizzard Watch, so we know it's for the show. Or you can hit Discord, either our Patreon Q and Podcast Questions channel or our Q Questions channel. We will look at both of those and pick out questions. And, you know, guys, it's okay to ask questions just for this podcast. You don't have to ask questions for Lore Watch. Lore Watch gets tons of questions. It makes putting the email together kind of annoying sometimes, and I'm just going to be out flat out optimistic here. Please just ask some podcast questions. Thank you. Or if you must do the thing where you ask them for either show, that's fine too. It just means that Joe and I basically have to get into a death match, and unfortunately, Joe cheats because he's got a lower center of gravity than me, and I can't get him really
Listen.
Good.
When Blizzard got rid of Ankh as a component in game, I just hoarded them all in real life. That's really what happened. I'm sorry.
So, yeah, okay. Thank you guys very much for being here with us, Joe Cheats, and we'll be here next week.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.